From the studios of WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Our topic today is climate change. What does this phenomenon, now widely accepted by the scientific community, mean for coastal areas in North Carolina? How concerned do we really need to be? It was 2010 when a report on sea level rise by the Coastal Resource Commission science panel turned the topic into a lightning rod in Raleigh and across the state. A draft version of the report initially recommended that North Carolina prepare for sea levels to rise up to 55 inches by the year 2100. The report also said a rise of 39 inches was likely. 2 years later, lawmakers passed House Bill 819, the Coastal Management Policies Act, which put a four-year moratorium on creating any policies related to sea level rise. The law also required sea level rise to be calculated on historical data, not on the accelerated rates that scientists have said are the trend of the future. North Carolina's response to the science made national news and became fodder for well-known comedians. Here's Stephen Colbert from the Colbert Report in 2012.
This is a brilliant solution. If your science gives you a result that you don't like, pass a law saying that the result is illegal. Problem solved. In fact, I think we should start applying this method to even more things that we don't want to happen. For example, I don't want to die. But the actuaries at my insurance company are convinced that it will happen sometime in the next 50 years. However, if we consider only historical data, I've been alive my entire life. Therefore, I always will be.
There's a great deal at stake on all fronts. Billions of dollars in investment could become virtually worthless if thousands of miles of coastal property are declared unbuildable. Such a designation could also cause insurance rates for existing property owners to spike. But environmental advocates and supporters of a more progressive approach say that without long-term planning, infrastructure, property, and important coastal ecosystems are all at risk. Joining us now in the studio to talk about this is Spencer Rogers, a coastal engineer and geologist with North Carolina Sea Grant, a coastal research and education program. He's also on the science panel that advises the Coastal Resources Commission. Spencer Rogers, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you for the invitation.
Also with us in the studio today, he's worked as a wildlife biologist and enforcement officer with the National Park Service and the Army Corps of Engineers. For the last 7 years, he's been with the North Carolina Coastal Federation, an environmental advocacy group. Mike Giles, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you, Rachel. I'm proud to be here with Spencer. I know Spencer very well.
During the next hour, you're invited to join our discussion. Are you a homeowner or a business owner with property on the coast? Are you concerned about sea level rise? Do you think the science isn't there yet and it's an issue for later generations? Would you like to see more community planning for it? Give us a call at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. You can also tweet us at @CoastlineHQR. Spencer Rogers of North Carolina Sea Grant, let's begin with you. Tell us first where we are right now with the science piece of the puzzle. What is the general consensus in the scientific community about how sea level rise will affect our region?
Well, one of the important things to understand is that there's no debate on whether sea level will rise or not, or has been rising, because it's very apparent in our tide gauge records and has been for at least 100 years in North Carolina and probably longer than that internationally. So sea level is gradually rising. It's never been a constant, and most people that work with water levels have understood that forever. It's only since climate became an issue that the debate over whether sea level was rising or not has become an issue. And I think the issue that's really under discussion is, if climate accelerates the sea level rise, how much will it do that in the future?
Why is the science controversial then?
It's a very difficult effort to predict climate, to be, for one thing, and it's hard enough to predict the weather next year or tomorrow, but climate in the long run is a very challenging prediction. But in order to understand what sea level is going to do, you've got to understand what climate's going to do. So all we can do is make some crude modeling and estimates of what might happen at some distant time in the future. Tomorrow is not very difficult. Next month, next week, the next year, those are things that we can predict pretty well. But the farther out you get, the more difficult it gets.
Mike Giles with the North Carolina Coastal Federation. Sea level rise is an issue that's been on your radar for quite a while. Why is it so important to this region?
Well, we all live here at the coast. We live, we work, we play. The coast is one of our main economic engines of our state and of our east coast of the United States. Everybody wants to live near the coast, and everybody wants to work or play. I'm in both categories. What's important, I think, to people is to get educated about sea level rise and to get educated about climate change. We think the science is there. You know, we feel that putting politics into science is troublesome. It causes problems when politics trump the science. Everyone at the coast should be concerned. Your first comment in the beginning was a lot of the coast could become unbuildable. Well, unbuildable, you know, that's not proven. That's not a fact. We need to think about change. We need to think about, I think Spencer is the expert here on sea level rise, but we need to think about adaption. We need to think about restoration of our coast that can help alleviate and mitigate some of the effects of sea level rise. But it's going to happen. It's going to change, and we need to be ready and plan long term for it.
So then what is the political fight that you encountered? If this is a phenomenon that's established, and if it's generally recognized that adaptation and the ways that we do that and mitigation options we'll get into in a little while, but why has it been such a political lightning rod?
Well, I think that people that make their living at the coast and real estate companies, developers, industrial, everyone, they have a stake in the coast. And when information comes out that they might not understand or that scares them, they're going to react. The NC20 group reacted very strongly against the climate change report and the sea level rise report, correct me. And
the NC20 group, just to be clear, is an economic development group that was very opposed to the initial draft report, Spencer Rogers, that your group put out, the science panel for the Coastal Resources Commission.
There are a variety of groups that were against it, including NC20. Mm-hmm.
And what we all need to do is work together instead of battling in two fronts. And, of course, Coastal Federation, we're involved in advocacy. That's my main job with the Coastal Federation, and we need to learn to work together and step up above the politics and start addressing the problem and talking about solutions.
So let's talk about what sea level rise is. Why is it an issue, Spencer Rogers, for coastal communities? What effects do we see from it?
Well, think about what any person as an observer along the coast is likely to see as sea level rises or has risen in the past. And it's probably not what people think. That what effect we will be able to observe is that we have nuisance flooding now that will get a little bit worse each year over the years and get progressively worse over time. And that's just mainly a nuisance initially. As the nuisance increases and some level of high frequency, it becomes more than just a nuisance and something we have to immediately deal with. But the other end of it is what it does on the higher end of our storm surges, so that the effect of sea level rise is to make each storm event, whatever might occur in the future, a little bit worse in each progressive year in the future. So we're looking at increased nuisance flooding and slightly increasing the storm surge elevations in the future. And those are the things that, if we're careful, we may be able to observe. But those are already problems now. They're not new problems. They're just going to get a little worse, and they're going to get a little worse fairly slowly over time.
And for those people who aren't from this area or who are new to the area, storm surge is a term that we bandy about quite a bit, but it could be jargon for some people. What does that actually mean?
Storm surge is the added water level that's caused by hurricane storm surge and pressure, by hurricane winds and waves as they approach the coast. They increase the water level so they can raise the water elevations. In Brunswick County, they go up to 18 or 19 feet above sea level.
And when you're talking about nuisance flooding, what does that mean?
Nuisance flooding is when you live in a beach community or near the saltwater body and the road floods a couple times a year and on a spring tide. Spring tide happens once a month. Some are higher than others. And all of a sudden, this is happening not just once every month or so. It's happening a couple days a month.
And how is sea level rise a factor for people who don't live on the coast? We're talking about coastal communities here, but people who live, say, in Brunswick County, but well inland, or New Hanover County, well inland. Why is it a concern for the entire community, Mike Giles?
Well, the coast is part of a water system. Many rivers or sounds or rivers or creeks, and when sea level rises or when we have storm floods or even when we have minor flooding, the flooding goes inland. And it costs money. It people can't get to school, they can't get to work. It causes more mosquitoes, diseases, health issues. So it's a concern for everyone with any close proximity to the coast, especially where the rivers and creeks and sounds.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. Today we're talking with Spencer Rogers from North Carolina Sea Grant and Mike Giles of the Coastal Federation about the possible impacts of sea level rise and how the state should plan for it. Do you think public policy is keeping up with science and best practices? How should communities plan for the future? Give us a call and let us know, 910-343-1138. Send emails to coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at coastline8. HQR. And when we come back, we'll take a couple of emails that have just come in. This is Coastline. Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. With me in the studio are Spencer Rogers from North Carolina Sea Grant and Mike Giles with the North Carolina Coastal Federation. We're talking about the possible impacts of sea level rise and how the state or individual communities should plan for it. If you have a question or a comment, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 910-343-1138, send an email to coastline@whqr.org, or tweet us using Coastline HQR. And we do have a couple of emails here. Adam says, how do you think the recent discovery of methane plumes in the Latvian Sea, including indicating a possible melt of seafloor methane clathrates off the coast of Russia, are going to change the rate of temperature and sea level rises?
I have no idea. That's why the climatologists are so important in discussing these issues, that it's not a direct relationship. You're looking at greenhouse gases that could make significant differences in what's going in and what heat is being retained.
We have caller Robert from Wilmington, and he is not on the air yet. Okay. Well, we'll talk to Robert in just a moment. He's talking about legislation. And speaking of this law that was passed in 2012, one of the provisions was that scientists would look at sea level rise every 5 years.
That's correct. And one of the ironies, I think, of the legislation is, first of all, the document that was prepared was for planning purposes. It wasn't a regulatory document. We were not asked to do that. And it was explicit for 90 years in the future. That was the original request. So that's what we gave them. But I think the interesting thing is that, you know, a lot of things aren't based on 90 years in the future. And that since it was for planning purposes, that there was no regulatory implementation plan and hasn't been, so the legislation hasn't really affected that. And the irony is that while North Carolina has received such bad press about how they've dealt with sea level rise, that we're one of the few states in the nation that actually has a law requiring that sea level rise be studied. So some states have tried to ignore it. North Carolina has a law requiring that we study it every 5 years. And that is a coincidental parallel to the science panel's recommendations, which included a restudy every 5 years forever.
And Mike Giles, I mean, some could say that a five-year review is a great idea to take into account new findings if there's new science. But you take issue with that.
We do. The Coastal Federation feels like that we, the state of North Carolina and local government should be looking long-term at this issue. You know, we're going to pass this legacy of a healthy coast, we hope, to generations upon generations, and we can't kick the can too far down the road. I mean, we can't keep kicking the can too far down the road. It's important to be able to look beyond your nose. 30 years is a drop in the bucket. The changes that happen due to climate change and sea level rise are very slow, just as Spencer described. And by the time you get to that next point of looking at the plan, what the scientists say, that the effects of sea level rise and climate change are going to start increasing. So we need to start thinking about that increase.
And what are some of the ways that we can't plan with a 30-year window? 30 years to some people might sound like a lot. Why is that not enough? What are you talking about specifically that isn't taken into account?
Well, when you talk about local infrastructure, roads, sewer systems, water systems, you know, those are long-term and very expensive economic investments for taxpayers and for local governments and the state government and federal government, because we get a lot of funds from federal government. If sea level rise starts to increase and climate change, the effects of climate change increase, we might be caught, let's just say it, with our pants down. And it's going to cost more long term to repair or change or adapt to those to climate change and sea level rise.
In most of the things we build and design, we're looking at some useful lifetime, and it's appropriate to use whatever lifetime is used for that design piece for looking at what the consequences of sea level rise might be. So I think the easiest to understand might be a nuclear power plant. You don't want to design a nuclear power plant for 5 years or 10 years. You want it something very long ways out. So something like what the 90-year recommendation from the science panel would be highly appropriate for a nuclear power plant. Some of the bridges in North Carolina are already being designed for much more than what the panel recommended, so that they're not unheard of. But other decisions are much shorter term, so there really isn't a demand to look at those long-term implements in something that's only going to last for 5 years or 30 years, or the average lifetime of a house is about 70 years in coastal North Carolina.
We're talking about sea level rise, the science, the controversy, and how and whether North Carolinians should be planning for it. Tell us what you think. Give us a call at 910-343-1138. Robert from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline.
Well, I just like to get to the point with regards to legislation and the coastal plain in general. It's clear that our legislature, and perhaps the national legislature, is governed more by economic concerns, as vested economic concerns, such as real estate brokers, agents, property owners, anything that impacts the price, the money they can get for this property. I don't care how far in the future you go, these guys are going to attack the legislature with money like an oil company would the national legislature.
When you say these guys, who are you talking about?
I'm talking about real property interests, all mm-hmm. property. Any property interest that you say is going to be affected, mm-hmm. it's going to affect sales, because people are easily frightened when they are first buying. They need to be sold. Anything that might affect that sale is going to be fought forever, because money stays around.
Robert, thanks so much for your call. Mike Giles, how is the real estate industry affecting the development of public policy here? Is that a factor?
Yes, and it should be. Everyone should be involved in political decisions, not just one special interest group, but citizen people from all walks of life. You know, when the original report came out, it was, as Spencer said, a lot of groups, but mainly economic development and real estate groups that you know, said the sky's falling. This is going to cause an undue burden shift and stop coastal and economic development along our coast, which just isn't true. And people want to live here. If you look at the history of large hurricanes, once people get their house knocked down, they want to build it right back where it was and bigger and better than ever. So, you know, to say the sky is falling because of the science panel recommendation for a long-term look at climate change and sea level rise is just not factual.
Well, NC20, this economic development group that has proposed a more moderate approach to planning for sea level rise, has said that there are two factors when it comes to economic development: the injection of money and the leakage of money. Injection includes land development. Leakage can come in the form of depreciation, excessive insurance premiums, or artificial constraints to development. What about the economic survival and growth of our coastal communities, Mike Giles?
I think it's all going to be about adaptation and change and working together. It's going to change. Sea level rise, as we both agree, everyone agrees, it's happening, and from all science, it's going to increase. So the face of some of our coast is going to change, and with it, the economics. So we need to think about long term on how we can adapt and prepare for those economic changes and those physical changes of our coast.
I agree that all those are important, but I think we need to be very careful here about where we're focusing. And while sea level rise is an important issue, if we focus entirely on that, we're forgetting about next year's hurricanes. And the problem we face is that the hurricane and erosion in the long term on our shorelines is here now. It has been for a long time. And those risks are so much larger immediately, not 30 years in the future, not 90 years in the future, but this year and next year, that it's critically important that we focus on those first and then figure out what sea level and climate change are going to do to them in the long run.
910-343-1138 is the number to call if you have a comment about the effects of sea level rise or climate change on North Carolina's coastal communities. Spencer, you've talked at length about the marketing of these ideas and why that's important. Why can't the science just stand on its own? Why do you have to look at this through the lens of how do we get public buy-in?
Well, the trouble is that it's a very long-term in the future problem that will get progressively worse. It's some of the fuzziest science that we have that we can put on the table as a future threat or a change in the threat. But the useful approach, I think, is not to focus on that, but look at other issues that drive you to the same conclusions. And one of the most important things that my work shows is that next year's hurricane probably makes a whole lot more difference than another 30 years of sea level rise. And that if we focus on designing storm-resistant buildings that don't fall down in hurricanes or don't fall in the ocean for erosion threats, that we're probably going to be adapting to sea level rise at the same time. And North Carolina communities have been very good at that over the years, far better than the press after the legislation indicated.
We have a tweet from Jessica. She says, sea level rise impacts, future sea level rise impacts also include marsh migration, higher water tables affecting water, sewer, septic infrastructure, roads. Mike Giles, what do you say about what this might mean for estuaries or wetlands, marsh areas?
I agree with Jessica. Rising sea level already has an impact. If you look up the Cape Fear River and some of our rivers, the dying trees, the change from freshwater to saltwater species, the migration of saltwater species up our rivers, up the Cape Fear River and other rivers, that the effect on the Outer Banks, the effect on the sound side is critical, where those beautiful sounds and marshes are the buffers for towns like Greenville and Edenton and New Bern. Those are critically important to protect those communities from the effect, as Spencer says, hurricanes. The tomorrow's hurricane will do a lot of damage. If a Class 3 or Class 4 hurricane comes ashore in 15 years with increased sea level rise, it will do even more damage. The effects on our water departments, Cape Fear Public Utilities Authority, and their well field and the Cape Fear River intake at Lock and Dam Number 1 could be greatly affected by rising sea levels. That's going to cost a lot of money. And we need to plan for it.
We just saw a couple of days ago there was news about an overflow from one of the pumping systems, one of CFPUA's pumping systems. Can you tie that into the effects of climate change, or did we just have a lot of rain?
Well, we had a lot of rain.
Yes.
That particular failure?
Yes.
Absolutely not tied to climate or sea level rise. I mean, these short duration changes cannot be tied to the long-term trends at all.
So then
it's a problem we've already got. And if one of the important approaches I think is useful in trying to sort out what's doing what to whom would be to ask, well, if sea level were not rising, would this have happened? And in the case of that spill, yes, it would have happened.
So then, taking a look at the difference between hurricane prep, is there a difference between preparing our coastlines for more severe storms and more frequent hurricanes and sea level rise? Are those the same adaption techniques that we need to think about, or the same mitigation methods?
Well, one of the most effective storm adaption methods in the worst of the hurricanes is raising the elevation of piling-supported buildings. The theory of avoiding the damage is pretty simple. Build it high enough so you don't get wet. And clearly, sea level rise has the potential to get wet at higher elevations. But what's often misunderstood is that the safety factors in flood design are some of the lowest of anything in the building code. So while the wind designs that we're routinely building to are maybe once in every 700 years, we designed 100-year floods. So it makes perfect sense to put safety factors into our flood standards. Now, we've been fortunate that many communities in North Carolina, particularly the coastal communities, have already been doing that. But that adapts to the hurricanes, but it equally well adapts to sea level rise in the future. And some of those numbers are pretty significant. There are a couple communities in the coast that have already adapted to 3 feet higher building construction standards. And before the state got involved, almost 60% of the state had adopted at least a foot of freeboard. That's the added elevation to the building floor elevation above the minimum standards. And that's an important safety factor. Even if sea level doesn't rise, if sea level does rise, then you're adapting to it with that extra foot.
So, Spencer Rogers from North Carolina Sea Grant, you're actually saying that North Carolina communities have been adapting to this, to storms for quite a while.
Yes, and the storm adaptation is, they did it for storms, but it's the same action that you would take to adapt for sea level rise. So, while we got the bad press of the politics, if you look at on-the-ground adaptation, that far more communities in North Carolina than in most other states have actually been adapting at a fairly healthy rate. And they've been doing so at their own choice for different reasons. But when sea level rises, it won't care why you took some action, only whether you did it or not.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about sea level rise, the science, the controversy, and how and whether North Carolinians should be planning for it. Tell us what you think. Give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also send an email to coastline@whqr.org or tweet us using CoastlineHQR. There was a report from Climate Central called North Carolina and the Surging Sea that said, in New Hanover and Brunswick counties alone, there's almost $9 billion worth of property that sits on less than 4 feet above the high tide line. Mike Giles from the Coastal Federation, are you familiar with this report?
I briefed it. Yes, I have.
Can you explain what that means?
It means that there's property at risk in the future if it stays where it is and stays constructed as it is with a rising sea level as Spencer mentioned, if you don't adapt to that rising sea level, especially when storms come, that property is going to be at risk.
And that same report also says the state has more than 2,500 miles of road below 4 feet, as well as 131 EPA-listed sites such as hazardous waste dumps and sewage plants. What are the potential implications of that?
Well, you saw in Hurricanes Floyd and Fran the effect of the extensive flooding on hog farms and confined animal waste operations where our rivers and sounds were polluted by these operations because they're in low floodplains. Most of our hog farms and large farms in eastern North Carolina aren't very high. And so in a large storm and the rising sea level effects, you're going to have effects on those operations and downwater effects when the flooding recedes.
And when we come back in a little while, there's another email that we're going to take. And Spencer, I'd also like to hear from you. We haven't gotten into a discussion yet about how you establish the sea level rise. You've talked about the minimal difference between the 39-inch level. You've talked about the difference between the width of 2 nickels and 3 nickels. So I want to get into that. It doesn't sound like very much to me. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. Today we're talking with Spencer Rogers from North Carolina Sea Grant and Mike Giles of the Coastal Federation about the possible impacts of sea level rise and how the state should plan for it. What do you think? Give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can send emails to coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at @CoastlineHQR. This is Coastline. Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. With me in the studio are Spencer Rogers from North Carolina Sea Grant and Mike Giles of the Coastal Federation. We're talking about the possible impacts of sea level rise and how the state or individual communities should plan for it. If you have a question or comment, we'd like to hear from you. 910-343-1138. You can send an email to coastline@whqr.org or tweet us using @CoastlineHQR. And Spencer Rogers, you said we might have left some confusion on the time frame issue. We were talking about the 5-year versus the 30-year time frame, and 5 years is for what?
Yeah, the 5 years was very explicitly put into the recommendations of the science panel because we all agreed that we don't see an acceleration in the present tide records for North Carolina, so that we think it's reasonable to expect something in the future, but it doesn't show up yet. And that for that reason, we think a 5-year relook is very critical to make sure we identify when it starts to accelerate, if and when that happens sometime in the future. So that's different than the 30-year outlook for the predictions. We still think an accelerated elevation rate, no matter what time period you look at, is appropriate over the historical rate.
And you, taking a look at this, you said in a discussion with our producer that the kerfuffle or the sort of public outcry over the differences in the inches that we're talking about amounts to not very much in practice. Is that correct?
That's the case. Keep in mind, when looking at sea level rise, we're measuring tidal changes twice a day, on the order of 3 feet in the Virginia line and about 5 feet at the South Carolina line. Here in Wilmington, it's 4 feet on the ocean, a little bit more than that on the river. So we average that over a long period of time. And while you don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand sea level rise, it actually helps a lot. The reason for that is about 80% of the tide change per day is caused by the moon, the gravity of the moon, and another 20% is caused by the sun. And there's about a 20-year, 19-year cycle that changes astrophysically that drives our tides. So if you want to look at what the tide is going to do in sea level over time, you've really got to look at at least a 20-year record to get some functional measurement of what's happening. But when we put that into an annual increase and look at this very long-term measurement series, that the historical rate in the Outer Banks, where we've got the best oceanfront tidal records, has historically been about 2 nickels per year for the last 30 years or so. And
you're talking about nickels lying on top of each other.
Yeah, the thin part. One on stacked on top of the other, it's only 2 nickels thick per year is the historical rate of rise. And in the southern part of the state, it may be as low as 1 nickel a year if we can clean up some of our tide gauges down here. But what was missed, I think, entirely was that the 30-year accelerated rate that the science panel recommended went from 2 nickels per year to 3 nickels per year.
That you're talking, I just want to be clear, you're talking about the difference between 2 nickels stacked on top of each other and 3 nickels stacked on top of each other.
That's correct.
And that's what was so controversial.
Over 30 years, the controversy was over one thickness of a nickel.
And so, okay, that's quantifying it for us. I think most of us can imagine what that means, but it gets very confusing. The New York Times published a piece earlier this year about a new report showing accelerated rates of sea level rise along the East Coast. And the piece also contended that the ground itself is sinking in certain areas.
It is sinking at very rapid rates in certain areas, but it's also rebounding and going upward in other areas. And then the northern areas, Maine in particular, is rebounding from the last ice age and is actually going up. There are areas of Texas where they were extracting oil and gas that were going down at extremely rapid rates on the order of 8 feet per century over shorter periods of time. 8 feet of drop, which shows up as a relative increase in sea level rise. So because the land was dropping, anybody that built on that land would see a sea level rise rate of 8 feet per century. So land is going up and down depending on where you're sitting on the coast.
We're talking about sea level rise on coastline and how North Carolinians should be planning for it. Tell us what you think. Give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can send an email to coastline@whqr.org or tweet us, as Jessica did, using Coastline HQR. We have an email from Janet. She says, flooding along the coastline in the subject areas is an example we don't want to experience. It's not just a concern of homes, but also the toxic chemicals that are used in the industry located in potential flooding areas. Businesses must also prepare and adjust for the future. Mike Giles from the Coastal Federation, what are some of the ways that businesses should be preparing for this?
I think businesses should be preparing with their infrastructure, where they locate, where they withdraw their waters, where they put their waste, how they treat their waste. If their waste treatment facilities are vulnerable to flooding or sea level rise, that needs to be taken into long-range planning. The Coastal Federation is very vocal about certain industries. You have to have your head in the sand if you don't know about Titan Cement. And one of the concerns about that heavy industry on one of our rivers, long-term, their plan is long-term, is the effects of sea level rise and flooding on that facility.
And what do you think those effects could be? What is your group concerned about?
What they're talking about is digging a hole in our groundwater aquifer, not a well, a pipe, but a giant 1,000-acre opening into our aquifer, the Castle Hayne and Peedy aquifers, which could pose potential contamination and flooding and hurricane and storm events. Long-term sea level rise could have an impact on that hole in our aquifer.
343-1138 is the number to call if you have a comment about sea level rise and how it could affect North Carolina's coastal communities. Spencer Rogers, what's the timeline now? So there was this Coastal Management Policies Act passed in 2012. As part of the science panel that advises the Coastal Resources Commission, what can we expect in terms of developing public policy?
Well, the commission has asked the panel to switch from the 90-year projection into the future to a 30-year projection in the future, which makes our job a lot easier, and it makes the prediction more reliable, I think, in the long run. But again, it's only 30 years, and there are other things that require planning for much farther in the future. So for 30-year mortgages, 30-year oceanfront setbacks, that's a fairly commonly used number in lots of different regulatory areas. And our projections, we expect, will be a good fit at some of the things that are already being used.
And when can we actually expect to see an update that will go before the North Carolina General Assembly?
I'll leave that specific date to the commission, but we expect to get something to them within the next year.
So you're developing that update now?
That's correct. We started on it.
And there's a vetting process that's going to happen.
We will have it externally reviewed by other specialists in sea level rise from out of state, and then it will go to the commission with comments from each, and then it will go into public exposure and review.
So just taking a look at the, I saw that there are a couple of scientists who will be making comments on your draft, and are these the same scientists who published a report that found tide gauge records around the world to show that the rate of sea level rise appears to be decreasing?
Houston and Dean have published a number of different papers on looking at sea level rise. And, you know, they're highly respected in almost everybody's book. We are quite comfortable with having them as reviewers.
Can you tell us more about that study? Mike Giles from the Coastal Federation, have you heard about this study? This is one of the things I was telling you off mic earlier. The more I delved into this topic, the more confused I got, because to then find that tide gauge records around the world show the rate of sea level rise appears to be decreasing, and yet at the top of the show you said we've established sea level rise as a factor. How does that...
The difference is that locally, you have to take into consideration the landform changes, and that we didn't look globally. We were directed to look at the North Carolina record, not at the international record. So in order to understand exactly what sea level rise is doing at any given community, you've got to know what the landform is using at the same time. And that requires a whole lot of effort beyond just looking at the tide gauge record. So we have the ability, we think, in the future, in this report anyway, to look more closely at our landform changes than we could in the previous study. And we think we can come up with something that will be completely acceptable to those two individuals.
And just to be clear, what is the difference between determining policy based on historical rates of sea level rise versus projections into the future?
Everybody on the science panel felt that because of other climate observations and other modelers and other predictions globally and internationally, that it's likely that some acceleration is going to happen in the future. And we didn't see that. We have not seen that in the North Carolina record so far in the last study. But we think it's likely to occur. So factoring in some recommended acceleration in sea level rise seems perfectly reasonable in the last study, and I expect it will be included in the next study as well.
And there is a mandate, isn't there, that the final draft report to the Coastal Resources Commission will be delivered in March of next year? Do I have that time frame right?
That sounds about right.
Okay. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about sea level rise, the science, the controversy, how and whether North Carolinians should be planning for it. We have about 5 minutes left in the show, so if you'd like to give us a call, do that now at 910-343-1138. You can also send an email to coastline@whqr.org. And we have an email from Sabrina. She says, how does intensive groundwater withdrawal by Titan Cement, for example, and Mike Giles, this goes to what you were speaking to before, influence land subsidence and subsequently local sea level rise?
I think the evidence as far as large withdrawals from our limestone aquifers has the potential to create sinkholes, drain wetlands, drain surface waters. As far as the effect on sea level rise, I can't speak to that because I'm not a geologist, but it's a fact that even with the Cape Fear Public Utility Authority withdrawal for their Nano water treatment plant, they have effects of drying out wetlands and sinkhole formations.
Yeah, in terms of the potential for groundwater withdrawal to cause some subsidence is there, but it's highly dependent on the sediments that the water is residing in. And the numbers I mentioned from Texas, for instance, are in some very soft sediments. So unlike the Castlehaine rock structure, that if you take the water out of a very soft mud, it's going to shrink a whole lot more than it would be out of a rock. And the types of subsidence that would be expected from the Castlehaine aquifer are quite different than some other soft sediment areas and much deeper extractions that go 1,000 feet deep, not 50 feet deep.
We just had a press release from the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management yesterday, and that is an agency part of the Department of the Interior, the federal government. Part of President Obama's continuing commitment to help coastal communities recover from Hurricane Sandy, which, as we know, pummeled the Northeast, and promote resilient coastal systems, BOEM, that's the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, and East Carolina University signed a two-year cooperative agreement to evaluate sand resources for coastal resilience and restoration planning. Is there a divergence between the federal government's approach to planning for this and the state government's approach?
I don't think so. That beach nourishment has been used for managing coastal erosion and the component of that that's driven by sea level rise for in North Carolina back to 1965 in Carolina Beach and Wrightsville Beach. The problem in sand sourcing for that has been that it was limited to the 3-mile limit, which is state jurisdiction, and anything beyond that required federal approval, which was lumped in with oil exploration and a lot of other things. It was much more complicated and environmentally risky. So what this has done is open that up to wider exploration with some the similar standards that we're using already in the 3-mile limit.
There was an article published, I believe, by the Coastal Federation, Mike Giles, that said North Carolina is the only state to adopt the historical standard and ignore evidence of a more rapid rise. Every other state is planning on 3 feet of sea level rise or more. Delaware was cited as an example, planning for sea level rise up to 60 inches by the end of the century. Southeast Florida projecting a 9 to 24 inch rise by 2060. California preparing for a 55-inch rise. Spencer Rogers, are we in line with where we should be when it comes to planning and other states?
Well, give us a chance to write the report first. But we expect to include acceleration in what we recommend for planning purposes to the commission. So there will be some acceleration, I'm sure, included in that. And we have been explicitly asked for 30 years that doesn't mean you don't need a higher standard for something that's going to be around for a lot longer than that. So it doesn't exclude any larger numbers in the future. That means that you're comparing apples and oranges when you look at a century and conclusion versus one for 30 years. You can't directly compare.
That's this edition of Coastline. That's all the time we have. I'd like to thank our guest, Spencer Rogers of North Carolina Sea Grant, and Mike Giles of the North Carolina Coastal Federation. Thanks to all of our listeners and those who called, emailed, and tweeted to join the conversation. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Join us next week when we take a closer look at downtown development in Wilmington, why its growth has been a tough nut to crack, promising developments, and the challenges that still exist. That's next week, Wednesday, August 13th at 2 p.m. here on WHQR 91.3 FM. Coastline's executive producer is Cleve Callison. Our producer is Ken Campbell. Associate producer is Lindsay McGrath. Our music editor is Bob Workman. The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of our listeners and our guests, and not necessarily of WHQR Public Radio or our licensee, Friends of Public Radio Incorporated. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.
The time is 2:59, and the Diane Rehm Show is just ahead on WHQR 91.3 FM.
Support for WHQR comes from our members and PNC Bank, working to achieve customers' financial goals, knowing that a community that works together thrives together. PNC, for the achiever in you. More information at pnc.com.
This is WHQR Wilmington 91.3 FM, Classical HD2, and WHQR.org, serving Myrtle Beach at 98.9 and Lumberton at 94.1, celebrating 30 years of public radio. Through the afternoon, partly cloudy, a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms, the high in the lower 90s today, a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms into the evening, the low tonight in the lower 70s. The time is 3 o'clock.